Hey marketers, if you want to get the latest news, trends, and insights in marketing, advertising, and tech, check out the Adweek Podcast Network. Learn from leading voices across media and marketing with original shows like Yeah, That's Probably an Ad, Marketing Vanguard, and Tech Magic with Kathy Hackle. Start listening now by searching Adweek wherever you listen to podcasts.
What's going on, podcast friends? Welcome to another special edition of The Garage, coming to you live from atop the amazing Aria Hotel in fabulous Las Vegas. Viva Las Vegas. Guys, we are so very thankful to all of our listeners, all the folks that have sent us notes about the podcast. The response has been overwhelming, amazing as always, and we could be not more grateful for each and every one of you out there who have tuned in, downloaded, subscribed this thing. It's a labor of love, but we're so happy to share it with you every time that we do it. Enough of the love in. It's time to get serious, or at least it's as serious as we can get. It's a moving target sometimes. We're back today at day two of CES, the Consumer Electronics Show. And just to reset a little bit, for those who don't know, CES is branded as the most powerful tech event in the world. CES is where brands, partners, innovators, and industry leaders get together and unveil their latest and greatest thinking, technologies, and breakthroughs in one place and really move the needle in the worldwide tech industry. We're super proud to be here representing the retail media industry and continue to bring bright minds together to share knowledge and make the space better. But enough about that and enough about me. I want to talk about the people in the room. But as always, you know, if you take two parts innovation, you mix it with equal parts sawdust, pine needles, engine grease, and you top it with a generous helping of blinking lights and wires, you get the vice president of product and innovation for Albertsons Media Collective. And his name is Evan Hovorka. What's going on, Evan?
Thank you, as always, Dan. Always a present every time we kick one of these off. And you, I don't know how much time you spend writing those, but I do appreciate each one.
Lengthy. I mean, I stay up and I worry about, you know, the gratitude that I get from you and how you think of me. So,
well, speaking of staying up, we had some pretty early nights so far on Vegas CES day two. So everyone's feeling pretty fresh still. Hopefully we can keep that trend going tonight and tomorrow.
I hope so. Lots of liquid IV up here in our Sky Suite. Mm-hmm. So if you need it, grab it. We've got two guests today, folks. Pretty excited about that. First, I'm very happy to introduce you to my longtime friend, Michelle Weiss-Skittle, who's in the room with us. Michelle is the head of media, creative, and ad operations, and just being an awesome person here at Albertsons Media Collective. She's absolutely one of the smartest and most enjoyable human beings I've ever had the pleasure to meet. Hey, Michelle, thank you so much for being here.
Dan, how are you? All these compliments. I feel excited to be announced that way. I'm doing great.
Good.
It's so fun to be a part of this group and to share our thoughts. So thank you for having me.
We're super happy to have you here in the podcast, in the garage with us. And our second guest today is Daniela Rittmeyer, who's got a really cool maiden name we'll have you share later. But Daniela is the head of data and AI, Center of Excellence for Capgemini. She leads the data and AI business across industry and business units, including the core areas of strategy, platform, and use case, focusing on human-centric and sustainable data value chain. She heads up the Data and AI Center of Excellence and established the generative AI practices to deliver trustworthy value add from end to end. That's a lot. But welcome to the garage. We're so happy to have you.
Thank you for the invitation, the spontaneous one here in Las Vegas at the CES. It's a pleasure to be here.
I want to hear about where you're from. Can we do that? Can we talk a little bit about
I'm from the east side of Germany.
Okay. Well, talk about it, please. Tell us about it. Tell us about the town, the city, wherever you're from. Tell us about it.
I'm from Germany, from the heart of Germany. You can call it Thuringia. And I grew up on the east side of Germany. So you can say from an American perspective, behind the prison, behind the wall. And it was really, really exciting for me then when the wall broke down to be able to be free to travel around. And my parents were really, really scared because they haven't had the chance to travel. And then I said, I would love to go to the US. And they said, you are small, as you can see, you cannot hear, but you see, you are a small blonde girl. We don't allow you with 12 years to go to the US. And then I found a way to go to the US. I won a competition of the, how do you say that in English? The Kultus Ministry. Yes, I made a competition there, and the prize was to go 3 weeks to the US and to find out about the social system. And that was my key to go as first person of my family to the US. Wow. And the first time to go to a plane.
That was a government, mock government program.
Yes, so from the government, they said to give you the chance from the east side also to go and to explore the world. And I did that when I was 14. That was the first time I was the first person from my family who walked in a plane, flew abroad.
Yeah, amazing. At such a young age.
Yes.
How cool is that?
That's fascinating.
So, at 14.
Yeah, and now I'm here in Las Vegas the first time. That is really, really amazing for me, yes.
Well, we're super glad you're here, Evan. We got to jump into this little thing that people have been talking about. Two initials, AI.
AI. Okay, great. I thought you were going to say IT.
IT. No, we don't want to talk to IT. They're a barrier for getting productivity done.
Except the Albertsons IT team.
You have to just bribe them with licorice and pizza.
Pretty phenomenal. Yeah. So, you know, everyone's been talking about AI. We've certainly been guilty of that here on the podcast and at the collective. We also thought we would try doing some AI. And so having Michelle and Daniela join us and really update our listeners and ourselves on all the cool stuff they've been actually designing and building and talking about, moving us out of the theoretical and into the real world, has been super cool. Because I think this is where all that hype and the buzz and the overuse of the AI word will show its value. Like what works, what doesn't work. We're going to put it into practice. It is going to be a core part of the collective's execution path. But we're really here to talk about it at an industry level. How does RMN think about AI? How do CPGs, advertisers, how do they see it coming into life? And we get Michelle's perspective, which is great, but Daniela overseeing multiple verticals, maybe multiple countries, can provide some pretty kick-butt insights into what we can expect from a reality-based AI perspective.
Can you talk a little bit about that? Just your broad vision, your how you view AI and the tools that we can bring to bear because of it. How do you even start? Where do you start with something like that? And what are the key thoughts you have as you put the strategies together?
Perhaps I can tell you something a little bit about my experience and Please. Where I start with artificial intelligence. So before I joined Capgemini, I was a part of the BMW group, and there was developing the first autonomous driving platform. And I made a lot of, let me say, painful experience. And then I was asked to establish the AI network and to derive the AI strategy for the BMW group. And there I learned a lot, because it was about how can you integrate the data-driven technologies and artificial intelligence along the value chain. And this is comparable to the job I'm doing now at the moment. So I'm not only responsible for automotive, that is where my heart is beating for and where I'm coming from. But since 1 year, I'm responsible for all the industries. So that means public, defense, retail, of course, automotive, telecommunication, et cetera, et cetera. And what is interesting, and not only since the, let me say, ChatGPT hype since last year, is that... And what is the red line in between everything, and this is not only since the ChatGPT hype we have seen last year, is that artificial intelligence is relevant across the entire value chain. So it, depending on what you would like to do, you can accelerate the processes, the core process, increasing the quality of your product. You can use it as a cost down initiative. Or if you move to the direction of product development and service development, you have the chance to make that intelligent and to reach a new level of human-machine interaction.
Wow. Okay. Where do we go from there, Dan? I feel like we have 1,000 questions.
Yeah, well, start. I mean, we can start. Michelle, you see, you know, there's a, this thread with AI that is moving through different industries, from aerospace, from defense to healthcare, and now even with groceries, the little grocery stores based out of Idaho, right? So how are we as a company starting to perceive AI, and what kind of capabilities and tools are we looking at as a result of the new capabilities that we can have?
Sure. So I want to piggyback on a key word that Daniela used, value chain. That's consistent across any industry. And the partnership that we have with Capgemini is really based off of them understanding our value chain. So my background is not AI. I'm very excited about going into the space, but my background is media and creative. And I consider myself to be an expert in that space, and we have identified as part of the collective and our history is we've really worked out how we want to go to market and what our workflow is. Now we can partner with someone like Capgemini, and again, that word value chain, and understand the value and different components where we can insert AI. So one of the examples that we're working on is really in terms of the media planning process. If you think about generative AI and understanding that human language, those objectives by KPIs, it's a great use case.
And perhaps I can jump in there. This is unique because I have a lot of questions or a lot of discussions on C-level and across the industry. And this is a core challenge we see, that they don't come from the value chain. A lot of times they see, like, how can I use that technology and develop the use cases based on the technology. So you're doing a great job. And also what I see yesterday, to come from that value chain perspective and the use cases we develop, the POCs, that is the right direction how you have to go to ensure that you do a sustainable artificial intelligence integration and that you go into the right direction. Congratulations for that.
Thank you.
So I think, you know, just quickly taking a step back and resetting some of the folks in the room like me who may not have a full comprehension of AI, and there's a lot of excitement about the possibilities that AI brings to the table, but there are concerns, there are fears about ethics or dangers of it taking over and what those misnomers are. But could, to give our folks a broad understanding of what AI actually is and how it works, could, this is really for both of you, how would you describe what AI is and how it works at a very basic level for non-technical people?
That is a good question. I always get that from the C-level, the question, what is AI? Yes.
You can swear.
And then I always tell the story. I have had that, I think, 5 or 6 years ago when I did that AI strategy, and I put 30 experts in a room. One were computer vision, others from natural language processing, others from robotics. And we tried to set up the one sentence, what is AI? And you can put all the experts in and you will not have one definition. There's no definition around the world. But I always say, if you would like to summarize it in one sentence and bring it to the point, you could say artificial intelligence is the automation of intelligent behavior. What does that mean? A machine is taking over tasks where we human might need intelligence for. So repetitive tasks can be taken over by a machine, or with the support of generative AI and the large language models we see, also human-like interaction can be taken over. And so that's it. And if you would like also, and sometimes I also ask to explain how you train a model, yes, to make that easy. So what do you need as a recipe or English that way, as recipe? Of course, you need data, yes. And based on the data, you can train your model. And of course, you have to bring that into the context and of the process. You would like to have that kind of use cases. And if you would like to compare that, I don't know, who of you have a child, children? You, yes.
Both.
I also have two children. Or if you remember to see how a child is learning how to walk, yes. They fall down from a statistic standpoint 200 times before they learn how to run. And this is the same with the machine learning model. So based on the data, you train that machine learning model and you test and validate it the entire time until the performance is on the right level and the accuracy is on the right level and the model can run like the child can run.
I love that. So Michelle, what stage are you at? Are you still crawling, toddling?
I think I'm crawling.
Okay.
Maybe. And it is so great to hear that perspective, because I come at it from that toddler. We're learning how to crawl and utilize this. And I see it as a tool. And why I don't feel afraid is because I know that my value and my team's value will still shine through in terms of training the model and how we operate, so that there is that human insight and that human overlay into what AI could provide. So I honestly think it's really exciting because it empowers people to do the work that they want to do.
Oh, great answer. And I think as a leadership team at the Collective, having you chosen as our representative for our first AI use case and partnering with Capgemini was perfect, because it's such a nice, beautiful place to deploy safe boxes of intelligence, right? We can just do it on optimization just in one platform, or we can just play with creative generative and keep it in a box before we deploy it to the real world to see just how, you know, how successful it can or cannot be. We don't have to be too invested in a program before we can see the results, test and learn, evolve or not, right? So that falling down is going to be, we can do it many, many times in your world without exposing any risk to our employees or our clients.
That's exciting. I mean, I think about it from trying to put it into to terms that I can understand as somebody who doesn't play with the blinking lights and wires that, that you three do all the time. But I think back to my teaching days, and there was this huge fear when these laptops showed up in our classroom that it was going to replace the teacher, right? And trying to change that mindset from one of the sage on the stage to the guide on the side a little bit. And now that I have every piece of human knowledge ever created, what can I do with it now? And changing that mindset a little bit is something that I think we need to come to terms with a bit with AI and how we're going to use it in our industries. But I think we're on the right path with the brain power in the room right now. I've got a lot of hope about that. Danielle, is the head of AI for and data for Capgemini, how do you think organizations of all sizes from the big conglomerates that we've got down to the startups, how should they be start thinking about investing in AI?
So, as we spoke before, across the industry and across the value chain, it's relevant. That means everybody has to think about that one. And I always recommend to think in three columns, or to be aware of three topics you have to handle in your organization to master the AI integration. The other way. Usually you come from that use case and you try to develop the one or the other use case. And a lot of POCs stuck in the POC phase and will not come to that return of invest because you are lacking in the corporate of a solid strategy, how to integrate that kind of technology. So next to the use case ideation, you need a strategy. What would you like to do with that kind of technology? What is your why? And where do you invest? Also concerning prioritization. And then the third missing piece next to the use case ideation and next to the strategy is the platform. Yes, that you're selecting the right partners, the right platform providers to make that scalable. Because this is a key point to get the return of invest, to scale it like every platforms in the digital world we see. Mm-hmm. And so in a nutshell, you need three things: strategy, platform, and the use cases to develop to be successful. And if you come from another perspective, from a corporate perspective, the one thing is the technology you would like to develop. The other thing you spoke about before is that value thing. And if you match these things together, you will find that kind of building blocks you were talking about. And then you have to decide, will I expand my competencies in the one and the other area to do that on my own? Or do I look for partners like Capgemini to support you there and to integrate that kind of technologies? And on the other side, this is a fourth area, which is really, really important, is about the competency expansion. You also have to educate your people in the corporate how to work with that kind of tools. What are the borders? What can be the expectation of that kind of artificial intelligence use cases? And what cannot be the expectations? And also, especially if we look around the world, I'm coming from Germany and Europe, there you have the discussions about the EU AI Act and the test and regulation. And in China, the behavior is also totally different. You also have to think about ethical question, unconscious bias, and how to educate about these kind of topics, which is really, really crucial.
Yeah, I love that last part. I mean, that's really how the collective thinks about our engagement with new platforms, new technology, is the human-led, the empathy side of it. That's a key way we differentiate. And anything we integrate here with the AI components with Capgemini will follow the same empathy-based decision structure. So making sure our people are taken care of, making sure our clients feel trust. They're not going to be exposed to content or creative that puts their brand and story in jeopardy. And what that means is test and learn. Do it quick, though, and find the right places to deploy it. And maybe it doesn't solve every single one of our problems, right? Michelle still needs some day jobs. But the places where it does
Thanks, Evan.
Provide value. I think what everyone should be excited about, what I know you're excited about, Michelle, sorry for bugging you, is it opens up time from menial tasks to go work on other bigger tasks, right? So now we don't have to do the day-to-day approval of XYZ or the minute-by-minute optimization of a particular campaign. We can go talk about the next big partnership, talk about the next big capability with a platform. And I think it allows our people to do bigger things.
And I, Evan, if I can piggyback on that, I think it's value that we're giving the people within our organization and our business. But if you think about that, because we work with clients, we're at, in the end of the day, the collective is in a client service business. if we increase our productivity, we could go to market faster with the deliverables that our clients demand.
Great point.
And so, you know, we're talking about it right now from a very business-centric standpoint, but there is this value chain to our clients who work with the collective from a time to market or a performance perspective as we're able to pull in more data sets. So, you know, I think it's very exciting and it's a lot of testing and learning.
Yeah.
And if you also look from a perspective, a cross industry perspective, we are always talking about that to be and to stay competitive. Yes. In a lot of different industries, it is a cost factor. Yes. If you don't integrate that kind of technologies and you don't use the potential, you will not be there at the market. We have seen that Nokia topic. Mm-hmm. We have seen that iPhone moment, and we are now in the next step of that kind of disruptive developments with multi-model Gen AI models. You have to do something with that, and you have to see how to integrate that kind of technologies, because otherwise perhaps your industry will not be there like it is there at the moment.
No, that's great. Dan, I'll throw this analogy by you, see what you think before we turn it over to the experts. But like any new shift change in technology, we can use the Industrial Revolution. There's fear, there's concern, there's opportunity. And if we were to equate the two, bear with me, a robot doing some sort of automated weld on a car part, let's say they're going to weld a door handle together, the investment required to get that machine in place with the right electricity, the weld components, and some sort of conveyor system, very expensive, right? And you better be in the door manufacturing business for a long period of time to recoup. It doesn't replace the staffing, and it just moves them up the chain. So now we have computer techs, robot repair people, and we can build more cars and do more things. So the company can grow, the people can grow. AI, I think, is a similar construct in that you can build all kinds of models, but they better be in service of what you're here to do. So as soon as you stop making cars and move to house doors, that weld system is going to be obsolete. But so build it in a way that's malleable. You can shift to different applications. Or you double down on the industry that you're committed to, but then you'd find other roles, find other components for the people to build. So I don't know how that resonates well, but it kind of ties that human nature of like something new creating fear and generally being less dramatic or negative in the long run. And it just changes the way we think, changes the way companies operate.
Yeah. And I always refer to the World Economic Forum. They're bringing up a Future of Job report every year, which is really, really impressive and amazing. And there they show on the database how the future will look like. And there you see that there will be no replacement. It will be just a shift. And in the latest version, they also announced that they see the need for skill transformation of 50%. So that means every second person of us has to shift their education and their qualification into that direction to be prepared for the future because of data-driven developments, artificial intelligence, and Gen AI. So just think about that. And also in several industries at the moment, and especially in the public sector, we also see a lack of competencies. Yes. Mm-hmm. So we have that shift here. And I just have had at the CES a discussion with somebody else from the automotive industry where we said that is a perfect fit. We now have that disruptive technology development. It's mature. We can integrate that one. So this is solving some challenges we have at the moment. So let's just see it as a chance and positive to bring that to the road.
Lovely.
Skew positive. That's what I always go with. Hey, listen, I want to shift topics just briefly. We've got two powerhouse women in a generally male-dominated tech and media industry, and I would be remiss if I didn't ask you guys to provide your advice for women trying to break into this industry or for women anywhere trying to grow their careers for a better future. Can you give some advice to our listeners on how your story, how you would do it, and give them your two cents on that, if you would?
Sure. For me, I would say embrace change and ambiguity. This is a new way of working, a new model for media in general is to embrace generative AI and this technology to enhance the value that, you know, is my core competency. And I'm excited. And that's where embracing this change, embracing the ambiguity and testing and learning, that's how I've built my career. So again, be excited.
I have two answers to that. The one thing that came to my mind was the developer session I have had with Sam Altman in May this year, and he said, if you would like to start in a career in AI, that's the right time to do that one. So just go for that one. This is the one recommendation. And we need a lot of interdisciplinary teams to ensure, ML models and solutions which have no unconscious bias. And that leads me to my second point. I'm next to artificial intelligence, my heart is beating for women empowerment and coding for kids, because I also have two kids. And if you look at the data set at the moment and the data sets which are public available, and perhaps you know that book Invisible Woman, where there you can read through how the existing data landscape is, so the woman and other minority groups are not represented. And if we look now to generative AI and the foundation models, and we don't stand up and integrate our knowledge and bring us in, then we will not represent it in that kind of models. And there will be a challenge concerning unconscious bias. Just to give you an example, I always love to give, if you think of HR processes and recruiting processes, if we build up with the data of the historical data, our ML models to predict who is the best for the job. And okay, now we are here in the US, I have to change the thing with other universities. And the historical data says the best persons are always the ones from the MIT and Stanford, for example, the, sorry to say, white male man, yes. Then there would be the recommendation for that white male from the MIT and from Stanford. And that's why we have to integrate that data, and we have to get active, all the women and the minority groups, to avoid that.
Yeah, basically setting the course of history. Now we get a reset moment, or at least partial, with AI. So representing your gender and your minority group in the discussion on where it goes, but also making sure the data starts off on the right foot and doesn't perpetuate past inaccuracies.
And there we also have a lot of solutions. You were talking about also how to develop the models. If you think about the data we have not available, so we can use synthetic data there, bring that into the models to ensure that we are representing the entire society.
Yeah, I love
this
that.
Really important.
Great answers. Holy cow.
I know we could stay here longer. I would say, you know, as we start to think about closing the shop here in the garage, both of you, if you had a magic wand and could change one thing about this industry, what would it be? Think about it for a sec. I think Michelle will start with you, because I saw your eyes immediately go somewhere.
No, I was thinking, for me, I know this is going to be a journey, and I'm ready to embrace that journey. But at the same time, I want to go fast. And if I had to change anything, it would be, I wish I could move faster. I wish this was available years ago.
Daniela, same question for you. If you could wave a magic wand and change one thing about this industry, what would it be?
I go back to the thing, the argument Michelle said, the need for speed, yes. Let me say it that way. And my recommendation would be for the entire industry and for the ones who would like to integrate AI technologies, think big, start small, and show value. I think this is also the thing we are doing together now. We think big, how artificial intelligence, generative AI can change your business and digitalize your business and bring you to that journey. We have already started with the POCs, and now we are scaling that one and bringing that into the value chain. I think that's it.
Easy, right?
So easy.
Right. So then, just to play buzzword bingo, AI is the one that everybody has in their center square on their bingo card right now. I mean, I just got to walk the floor at CES, and it is... it is universal. It is plastered on every engagement. It's plastered on every handout somebody gives you. So cross that one off the list. What would be the next industry buzzwords you'd have us be on the lookout for?
Oh, I don't know the next industry one, but I think that
you get to speculate. That's where the fun is.
Well, no, but where my mind, I thought you were going to say, what is AI replacing?
Oh.
And if I go back a few years, it was big data.
Yeah.
Big data. And
there's literally a book called that.
And for me, AI is the new big data, because you are seeing it so prevalent in everything that people are talking about from a capabilities perspective. But you have me stumped. I have to think about this one, Dan.
Okay.
Because my mind went to the past versus the future.
Well, so. I can give you a pass. We can jump over to Daniela. Can you think of any industry words we should be on the lookout?
So I think we don't have AI at the moment. We have generative AI. Mm. And we see a paradigmic shift concerning the future of human-machine interaction and why it is that way. It is because we are going into the disruptive development of multimodal foundation models. That means that it's not only about text, it is not only about vision, it is not only about tactile or acoustics. All the kind of technologies will merge together. And the next big thing is that you cannot decide or differentiate if you are talking to a human or a machine. That will be the next big step we see with all the pros and the cons. So that will be the future and the challenge we have to tackle.
Did you think of one?
How do I beat that?
You don't.
Okay.
No. Nope.
So, Dan, can you let me off the hook here?
That's why we bring experts into the garage to make us smarter and better, of course.
And that's why we have a partnership with Capgemini.
Correct. Absolutely. Well, listen, you two, this was a rapid-fire special session of the garage here at CES. We were super happy to have both of you here and couldn't be more thankful for you to be in the garage. So, Michelle Weiskittle, Daniela, thank you so much for being here. And any parting shots for our listeners before you head out?
Thanks for having us in the garage.
Of course.
Thanks for having me here. Let's rock the CES.
Very good. All right. So watch out for these two. They're going to be tearing it up tonight, it sounds like. Well, that's it, folks. Wrapping it up here at CES, our special editions broadcast live from the ARIA studio, or at least recorded live, meaning we had people in the room for a change instead of trying to do this thing virtually over the cloud, which is a miracle of modern science and technology, but it's always fun to get together with our friends in the room and help share knowledge and leave this industry better than the way we found it. Much like when you go camping, you pack it in, you pack it out, leave it better than you found it. If you like what you're hearing, and we really hope you do, please like, subscribe, go find this thing where you find all your podcasts, The Garage, download it. Let us know what you think. Drop us a line. Go ahead and hit us up and let us know what we can do better, what we can do different, what you'd like to hear. And we'll go search that out and provide some expertise and bring some really smart people into the garage to share their knowledge with you. Thank you so much for tuning in, listening. This is The Garage. Talk to you next time.